E-A-L.
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to Ask a Vegan. It is one very hot July 1st, 2012 here in New York City. And I'm very happy to be here today to talk about all the things that I love talking about, everything related to food and a vegan lifestyle. Well, I just came back from Cape Cod. And it's interesting going to different places. You always learn new things or always learn how to be more open. And I want to say non-judgmental, but I can't help but judge sometimes, especially seeing in a community like Cape Cod, which really surprised me, so many overweight people. And I talk about this a lot. We talk about it a lot. You hear it a lot in the news that we have this epidemic of obesity in the United States. About a third of the adult population is overweight or obese. The child population is increasingly gaining weight. And it seems so bizarre when it's just juxtaposed with how many people in the world are starving. It's about the same, a billion overweight, a billion starving, something like that. And you just wonder, how did we get to this place? And I was in Cape Cod on a vacation. A long time ago, I purchased a timeshare. I was living in California in the 80s, and I used to like to go to these sales presentations for different timeshares. They were really popular back then. And you'd get a gift for going to the sales presentation, whether or not you purchase. And I went to a number of them, and then I discovered one that really was appealing to me. I wasn't necessarily in the market to buy a timeshare, but ultimately I did, and I've been really happy with it. And one of the things that I've liked about it is that it has enabled me to travel to specific locations that I enjoy, to do things that I enjoy, and be in a place of lodging that has a kitchen. And for the most part, the kitchens in these resorts that I've stayed in have been very well equipped and have most of the basics of your average American kitchen, with a stove, an oven, microwave, blender, all kinds of pots and pans and plates. And this is really helpful when you want to eat healthy, because part of vacationing, I know for many people, when they think about vacations, they think about eating and they end up eating out all the time and gaining weight. And that doesn't have to happen. My weight stays the same when I travel. That's because I pretty much eat the same way when I'm traveling. Sure, it's nice to go to a fine restaurant or be invited by people and enjoy their style of food, their culture of food. That's all really fascinating and fine. But there's no reason to go overboard at any time. And when I'm traveling around the United States, when I was younger, I used to do a lot of skiing, and so I would use one of my timeshares and go skiing all day, and I would come home and make myself a really healthy, satisfying, delicious meal. I'd fuel up in the morning and get out skiing again, and these kitchens were really helpful to have. Unfortunately, some of the resorts I've been going to recently that have been added into my particular system don't have full kitchens anymore. They have these, what do they call them? They're not even efficiency kitchens. It's a mini refrigerator, a microwave, and some cabinets with a few plates, bowls, cups, and a handful of flatware. And a toaster. And I can make do with this. Yeah, it's been amazing what I've been able to create in a very small hotel room while traveling. I've talked about this before, where once when I was traveling in Europe doing an opera tour by bus, I traveled with a small hot plate and one pot and would pick up food whenever we had the ability to stop at a store, and I'd travel with it, and then whenever we were in our hotel, I could make some meals, and that was really fun, and I did some amazing things. But in these resorts, normally I'm expecting a full kitchen, and I just find a supermarket nearby, buy some food, and we're good to go for the week that we're there, and we're able to go out and enjoy all the things in the location without really being concerned about food, because I like to eat healthy, simple food, and I find that if I'm traveling and don't have access to making my own meals, and I end up in restaurants, even if I work at ordering sensibly, I find most of the food is oversalted. Usually it's hard to find organic, and I don't feel as good. I don't like it. My body is really tuned right now to eating fresh, mostly locally grown, minimally processed, organic, no salt, very low salt, low oil food. And when that changes, you know, it's okay to indulge for a treat or a celebration or something, but when you're doing it every day, it can really wear you down. Okay, what's my point? So I was in this resort, and the what we had for a kitchen consisted of a small mini refrigerator and some plates and bowls, some cups, some flatware, a toaster, and that was about it. And I was frustrated because it didn't even come with a large bowl for a salad. So the first thing we did was we went to a local store and bought a big glass salad bowl. It's nice because I got to bring it home. Fortunately, we didn't fly to this location, so we were able to bring a good amount of things with us in the car, and we were able to bring stuff home as well. So it was like $5.99 for a very nice, heavy-duty glass bowl, and this enabled me to make salad because I eat a lot of salad every day. So one of the things, if you want to travel and you don't have access to great kitchen facilities, the most obvious thing to me, and it's not obvious to many people, is you don't have to cook your food. You can eat an all-raw diet, at least for a week, if you don't want to do it all the time. I did it for 2 years, and it was great. But it's not hard to do, especially in the summertime. And what I mean by eating all raw is lots of big salads. And I mean big, folks, big. You know, people say, oh, I couldn't do that because I get hungry. Well, you have to eat lots of food, and that's the fun about it. And a dressing can be made of chopped tomatoes and avocado, lemon juice, raw nuts and seeds, and then lots of fresh, ripe fruit, delicious, great for desserts, breakfast, and then, you know, depending on any of the extras that you might have where you're staying, you can get a little bit more elaborate. But I did have some fun, and I did indulge, and when I say indulge, I mean it's ridiculous, but I'll explain in a minute. Here's some of the things we did. Fortunately, and this was really fortunate, there was a Trader Joe's store near the resort. And that enabled us to, every couple of days, pick up some more food. And what I did was get a few bags of frozen items. The freezer section in this refrigerator is super, super tiny. I got a bag of organic broccoli, organic peas, and some organic brown rice. Have you seen these things? I mean, I can't believe it. For me, staying in a resort that didn't have access to a stove, this was nice and convenient. But for most people on a daily basis, you can't make your own rice. You have to buy it pre-made and just microwave it? I mean, really? It certainly came in handy. It was not as good as rice that I will cook at home, but it was fine. And I bought some vegetarian, vegan, actually, burritos and a organic, I think it was a tomatillo sauce or a, it's like a salsa, but it had corn in it and some other ingredients, mildly spicy, organic, and some avocados, some fruit, some lettuce for salad. And we brought with us a jar of tahini from home. I can't seem to do without it. And it's so perfect for dressings. It makes my favorite salad dressing. In fact, the tahini salad dressing recipe that I use all the time is on the website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, under sauces, I think we put it, savory sauces. Anyway, you could put tahini in the search bar and find it. It's so simple. And I usually just use tahini water and some sort of acid, like a vinegar or a citrus. And we did buy an organic chocolate bar. And then some baked tofu and some vegan tofu burgers. They happen to have a tofu burger there that's made with tofu and carrots and some other vegetables. Really tasty. It's a great hamburger substitute, and we get them from time to time. What I love about these particular tofu burgers is they have an eggy-like feeling to them, flavor to them. Of course, soy has lecithin in it, like eggs have lecithin in it, and so that's what I believe gives tofu its egg-like flavor. So one night we had a big salad and broccoli, peas, some rice with this jar of organic sauce. It had really nothing in it but just simple vegetables and seasonings. And a burrito. And it was really satisfying, very filling. Another day, which was really fun, I crumpled up these burgers, two of them, and along with a single serving of the brown rice package and a half of an avocado. So I cooked the rice, I cooked the burgers, and then I crumpled them all together and then I added the avocado in small chunks and heated the whole thing together. And it tasted like what my memory is of fried rice. Now, I have not had fried rice in a gazillion years. I used to really enjoy it. But this was similar, probably better, but really fun, really delicious. Now, I use the microwave. I want to make a big, giant disclaimer here. I do not enjoy using microwaves. I don't own a microwave, but I do use microwaves on occasion. An occasion such as this one, I'm in a resort or a hotel, and I want to heat something up. I will use the microwave, and I'm not gonna fret about it. What really confused me, though, now this was a small microwave, and I know that there are larger, more powerful ones out there, but it was really challenging to make a meal because I could only put one item in at a time. It took a few minutes, and then I had to put another thing in, and then the thing I took out got cool as the other thing was heating up, and it was, for me, kind of difficult to time everything, but I just had fun with it. So I was thinking, you know, is a microwave really that much more convenient than cooking some simple food on a stove? I don't really think so. The cleanup was a little easier, but then if you think in terms of long-term versus short-term, the cleanup consisted of taking away packaging and putting it in the garbage. But what happens to that packaging that's in the garbage that goes to landfill? So what I'm actually doing is postponing the cleanup for someone else centuries from now, if it ever actually, if the landfills ever actually get cleaned up and treated, and if some of this packaging material ever gets to break down and become something useful again. It's just an interesting perspective that we just don't think about. We think about convenience in terms of how to get something done in the shortest amount of time with the minimal effort, but what are the costs? What are the long-term costs? What are the side effects? And so for me at home, I use a bunch of stainless steel pots. I cook things up, minimal packaging. I rinse my pots. And when you're cooking with vegetables and no oil, the cleanup is crazy easy. I rarely even use soap. But there's very little garbage as compared to microwaving food, which has a lot of waste. But it was fun. And then, of course, there's dessert. And I had, I bought a bunch of pears. And I'm a big fan of poached pears. It's one of those simplest and most elegant desserts. Yes, there's a recipe on the website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Normally, I like to poach pears in a sauté pan or a small stainless steel pot with a little water in it. But again, I'm here in this resort and I didn't have access to that. So I took a small bowl, put a little bit of water in it, and I cored two pears. Now, I didn't have an official apple corer or potato peeler or a device used for coring. I had to use a knife and cut the bottom out of the pear to get the core out. I don't peel my pears because I buy them organic and I like the skin. And I put a couple of pears in, just sitting in about an inch of water in a bowl, and put it in a microwave until the pears softened up a bit. And then I took them out of the water and placed them on some plates. Now here's the fun part. I had some chocolate. You have to be very careful in a microwave because things can burn up pretty quickly, especially sugar. This particular bar I had raisins in it, and the raisins don't microwave as well as the chocolate does. So I put just a small amount of chocolate in a dish and microwaved it for about 20 seconds and then looked at it to see if it was still soft or hard. I added a few more seconds just to get it soft enough to make a nice sauce. And then I put that on the pears. Delicious. Another day I did something similar. We had bought a jar of almond butter. And if you just take a tablespoon of almond butter, put it in a little small dish, and add a little bit of water, a tablespoon at a time, and beat it with a fork to make it creamy, and you can thin it as you like, you make a nice almond cream, which also goes really well over the poached pears. Another day, I melted a little bit more chocolate. Not a lot. A little goes such a long way, especially when it's melted. You really don't need very much, but I just made a little bit, maybe three tiny squares or something. And we bought some organic strawberries and organic cherries. And we had a little dessert fondue where we could dip the chocolate and the cherries into the dip the strawberries and the cherries into the chocolate. So delicious. And wow. And then I thought about the people that we would see in the neighborhoods where we were driving around, walking around, going to the beach. And I knew these people were not eating as well as we were in that little space with that little microwave and that little mini kitchen. Because most of these people were very, very overweight. It's sad. It's really sad. Oh, so I'm here, and I talk about being a vegan and all the wonderful, delicious foods that we have every week. And I'm here for people who ask questions and want to know about the lifestyle. I love getting your comments. My email is info@realmeals.org, and anytime you have any comments or questions, send me an email and you will get an answer from me. It's that simple. There was one more thing we had almost every morning while we were staying in Cape Cod, and I'm a big oatmeal eater. We had brought up a bag of rolled oats. And a few days we were able to have it cold. It's easy enough to buy a container of soy milk, kept that in the mini refrigerator, cut up some fruit, pears, bananas, some raw nuts and seeds, and soy milk and raisins, delicious. And then one morning I wanted to have cooked oatmeal. This was a little more challenging. I think it's easier to cook oatmeal when you get quick cooking oats, but I like to use the rolled oats, the coarse cut oats. These don't cook as quickly. So I soak them for several hours. You could soak them overnight if you like, covered in water. And then in the morning, they're ready to microwave, and you can microwave it, and it cooks a lot faster, it gets a lot softer, and then add whatever fruits, raw nuts, and seeds that you like to have. Really simple, delicious, and in a microwave. Okay, moving on to the news. Lots of things going on in the news today. There's a new study that came out from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Okay, that's a heavyweight organization. And what did they come up with recently? The Journal of the American Medical Association. This came out June 27, 2012. Effects of dietary composition on energy expenditure during weight loss maintenance. Now, this is a mouthful. And I read it, and I'm trying to make some common sense out of it. Basically, what they did was they wanted to see if there was more to weight loss than calories. So if people consumed, let's say, 2,000 calories and got those 2,000 calories with different kinds of foods, what would their weight loss be? Because for a long time, people have been talking about if you need to lose weight, you need to reduce the number of calories you're eating. And that's a piece, but it's not the entire piece, because the kind of foods you eat matter. Certainly, when you're eating calories, you want to be maximizing the nutrients you're getting with every calorie. You want to maximize the phytochemicals, the vitamins, minerals, the antioxidants. You want to minimize the cholesterol, the saturated fat. And you want to, I believe, get your food from minimally processed whole plant foods. Now, this study examined three different kinds of diets. They examined what they called an isocaloric low-fat diet, which got 60% of the energy or calories from carbohydrate, 20% from fat, 20% from protein. That's pretty good. And it's funny because they call that a low-fat diet, and that's reasonably low, but that's not really a low-fat diet. In my circles, low-fat is maybe 10% of your calories come from fat, at the most 15%. And then the other diets they compared were a diet they called low glycemic index diet, which was 40% from carbohydrates, 40% from fat, and 20% from protein. And then a very low carbohydrate diet, 10% from carbohydrates, 60% from fat, and 30% from protein with a low glycemic load. This last one, the very low carbohydrate diet, is like an Atkins-style diet. And if you've ever followed what goes on with an Atkins-style diet, you're really compromising your system. You are mortgaging your future to lose weight quickly on this diet. It is a really unhealthful diet. And then they came up with a couple of parameters that I found really kind of confusing and convoluted. They have something called the resting energy expenditure, and I believe what that means is that while you're resting, how much energy are you burning up? And then total energy expenditure. And ideally, you should be, the more energy you burn, the more weight you're going to lose. And what happened was they found that the first diet, this low-fat diet, which was really the most in carbohydrate, had the best results. And they found that people lost weight better with this first diet. And they don't tell you exactly what people were eating, or at least I didn't find it in the portion of the article that I read. But in order to obtain a diet such as this, you really need to be eating mostly plants. And I think it would be important, maybe it'll come back. I'm sure it'll come out some point in the future. But they need to talk about what the people are eating, not just what makes up the food, fat, carbohydrate, and protein, because I think what researchers are going to discover one day, and there are many of us who know this already, not all fat is the same fat. Not all protein is the same protein, and not all carbohydrate is the same carbohydrate. Plant protein, in my opinion, is superior to animal protein. Whole, minimally processed fats from raw nuts and seeds, avocado and coconut, are superior to oil and fats from animals. But they don't really talk about that here. And carbohydrate. You can get carbohydrate from all your fruits and vegetables. Certainly, whole grains are a place for carbohydrates, but beans are a great place for carbohydrates. And carbohydrates have gotten a bad rap, but we can't live without them. And the majority of our diet really needs to be carbohydrate. Anyway, so I'm glad to see that the results were as I would expect them to be. And hopefully their studies will get a little more sophisticated over time with information we already know. I don't know why it takes them so long to get to what many of us already know, that the best way to lose weight is with whole, fresh, organic, minimally processed plant foods. It's the best way to lose and the best way to maintain and feel nourished and feel satisfied. And it'll be interesting to hear what Dr. Jill Furman has to say about this article. I'm sure he'll comment on it because this is something he's been talking about for a very long time. And it's not a surprise that his book, Eat to Live, has been on the New York Times bestseller list now for almost a year. Very, very exciting. What else is going on in the news? corn. Corn is getting a lot of press. The first thing I want to talk about is I read, I think it was the USDA. Yeah. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Agriculture Statistics Service, recently put out, yesterday in fact, that the U.S. farmers plant the largest corn crop since 1937. And I guess that's something to celebrate, that we've increased our corn crop to 96.4 million acres of corn, up 5% from last year. And we've been increasing the corn acreage for 4 years now. And we did it very quickly. Apparently, it was the quickest planting pace on record. Now, I don't know what is attributed to that other than the weather might have made it ready to grow and make it easier to plant more quickly. And just as the corn was planted quickly and abundantly, U.S. soybean growers also reported a significant acreage increase this year. 76.1 million acres have been planted to soybeans, up 1% from last year. And this is the third largest soybean acreage on record. Ah, yes, it is the weather, they say, that allowed the soybean growers and the corn growers to get off to a quick start. And this has its advantages and disadvantages. I'll talk about that in a minute. But there's something important to recognize here. We're planting a lot of corn. We're planting a lot of soy. But who is taking advantage of these crops? I believe 85% of the corn grown in the United States is genetically modified. That's huge. And the bulk of the corn and soy that are grown in the United States are grown to feed animals. And then those animals are slaughtered to feed people. Think about it. It's tremendously inefficient. And it's also not a sustainable way to grow so many acres of the same crop, monocropping on such a large scale, is so devastating to the soil. Nature is brilliant in terms of the way she has designed things to grow. And we've learned so much over thousands of years about what things grow well with other things. Different plants support each other. One plant will keep certain bugs away that'll normally eat up another plant. Some plants provide shade for others that can't be in too much sun. There's a brilliant balance, and we've lost so much of that knowledge with industrial agriculture. But the biggest thing for me is how inefficient growing plants to feed animals, to feed people, can be. And we can be feeding the world. We can be growing so many varieties of plants for food, for medicinal purposes, and have space left over for wildlife sanctuaries, for conservation areas. How long is it going to take? Okay, so here we are. We're growing a lot of corn, a lot of corn, a lot of corn. And most of it is genetically modified. What does that mean? There's different kinds of genetic modification in the plants that we grow. But with corn, for the most part, they've been modified to have an herbicide in it that is natural. that is created naturally by plants called BT. But these plants have been modified to produce an abundance of this herbicide BT, and we don't really know the consequences of this quantity in the plant itself on bugs, on birds, and by the way, mammals, cows, and humans. And one of the big problems is with such an abundance of corn being grown this way, there is no way to protect the organic fields in this country. Not in the way crops are grown today. Pollen goes up in the air and it flies around and lands wherever it wants to. There's no protection. And so a lot of the organic fields of corn, unfortunately, are contaminated. Some of the organic food suppliers go to Europe for corn in order to guarantee that their products containing corn are organic. And there's been something recently in the news, and I'm not sure how it will turn out, but it certainly is interesting. Most of the tests that have been done on genetically modified foods are very, very short term. And they don't test the long term results, obviously. And this is really important because we need to understand the cumulative effect of eating genetically modified foods on a regular basis. And recently in the news, Syngenta has come up, and there's one particular farmer who used genetically modified corn. Now, this was a while ago, back in the early 2000s. And he claims that after growing genetically modified corn from Syngenta, that his cows died from eating this corn. And he tried to sue them and lost. And recently is coming up with a new criminal case against Syngenta, claiming that they knew that in their own studies, some animals died consuming this BT corn, and that they lied about it. Interesting, isn't it? I'm not sure how that's going to turn out. Certainly, I would love to see an end to genetically modified food. I would not like to see anyone harmed in the process in order to make that change happen, but I have a feeling, unfortunately, that that's what's going to happen in order to make change. It's really very sad, isn't it? Yeah, it's very, very sad. If you want to know really what's going on with corn, a great documentary is King Corn, and you can Google King Corn. PBS has shown it, and you can probably watch it a variety of different ways, but it's a fascinating film. I found when I watched it a few years ago that not only was I on the edge of my seat, but I wanted to scream and hurt something. It was so frustrating to see the people that were paid subsidies to do nothing, to not grow, and all of the politics behind corn and all of the harm that goes on, and the farmers that try to grow corn organically, farmers that get caught for growing genetically modified seed that they did not purchase and did not know they had, and then get penalized for growing what they didn't even want to grow. It's just a crazy, crazy planet. Crazy planet. Now, as I mentioned before, apparently we've grown more corn than ever before, 96.4 million acres of corn. And then a couple of days before that USDA article came out, CNBC had an article about why you should watch corn prices for the next 2 weeks. And it reports that corn is facing the worst crop conditions in two decades, and the next 2 weeks will be critical in determining the size and quality of the U.S. crop. Okay, so were we growing more because we knew we were going to have problems? I'm not really sure. I'm not a corn expert, but it does sound kind of corny to me, doesn't it? But the problem is drought, unusual heat, and lack of rain across the heart of the Midwest corn belt threatens this year's crop yield and has put fire under futures prices. Okay, everybody's concerned about prices. I'm concerned about healthy food for everyone to eat. Now, the problem, too, is that corn is not just grown as feed for animals, and it's certainly not just grown for people to enjoy on the cob or frozen to eat later as frozen corn. Corn is used for many, many things. High fructose corn syrup is one of them, which is going in to sweeten just about everything these days. And hopefully they'll take a hit as more places, including New York City, are working to eliminate sugary beverages, or at least high volumes of sugary beverages for individuals. And high fructose corn syrup is one corn product, but corn is in cornstarch, and corn is used for lots of different things in manufactured processed foods. But that's not it. It's also used for ethanol in gasoline. And another thing that I like about corn is when its starch is used for packaging material or for biodegradable, quote, paper products. There are some paper and plastic products actually, that are biodegradable and made from starch. And cornstarch is definitely an ingredient. And what's great about it, what's fun about it, is you can get the fork, the plastic forks and spoons, the plastic, quote, styrofoam-like packaging peanuts, but they're biodegradable, made from starch, and you can just put them underwater and they dissolve away, and so you don't have to fill landfills with this stuff. And that can be really attractive. It's a better choice, I believe, than when compared to plastic that take millions of years to degrade. But it competes with corn as a food product. Lots of demand for corn all around. And that affects everyone in terms of prices, because if more people want the product, supply and demand, the price goes up. And if we're going to have a hot and dry few weeks, all that corn that was recently planted is going to really struggle. And I don't know about the Midwest, but I do know that it's very hot here in New York. I know that it's very hot in Colorado, where they're having those horrible fires. So things may not look good for corn. And before I finish talking about corn, it is summer. And for me, summer means some wonderful corn on the cob, I grew up on Long Island, and I personally think that Long Island corn is the best anywhere. I love the white corn. Some of the yellow corn, it's sweet and delicious. Of course, I prefer it to be organic. But as I mentioned before, it's really hard to guarantee that even the organic corn is completely free of genetically modified contamination, which is a very sad thing. But corn on the cob is great, and it's great in so many ways. So the first way I like to eat it, and I discovered this when I was eating an all-raw diet, is corn on the cob is great raw. It's so easy. You can go to a farm stand, pick it up, grow it yourself, pick it up, peel back the husk, take away that those fine golden hairs, and you've got the corn on the cob, and just eat it. It's lovely, and it tastes sweet and delicious. You don't really even need to cook it, but you can. And another great way to cook corn on the cob is in the barbecue, in the husk, actually. You can wrap it up in foil and just throw it on the coals, and really delicious. It's a great way to cook corn. Certainly just boiled up is fine. Roasted in the oven or cutting the corn kernels up and doing all kinds of things from the corn with the corn kernels. Corn is a great food. I really enjoy it. And I like mine locally grown, in season, and organic. Enough said. Oh, the world, the world, the world. So many things are going on. And it's hot. It's really hot. I personally don't like to use air conditioning. I know I'm one of those few crazy Americans. But not only is it very energy intensive to cool air on the inside and spew out hot air to the outside, making the outside even hotter than it would be naturally. I don't want to participate in that. But the other thing is, I feel so closed in and confined when I'm in a space that is sealed from the outdoor environment. It doesn't feel good to me. When we do use the air conditioning on really rare events when it's just so super hot your brain can't think, I feel so cut off from the outside. I really like to have my windows open, the door open. Fortunately, I have a terrace. I like moving around. The air moves around. And I think it's also a good test of your personal well-being and health. I remember 6 years ago now when I was going through cancer that it was really, really hard to manage the heat because I wasn't well. And fortunately, over time, I've come back to normal, which is enjoying the heat, enjoying sweating, enjoying the release of toxins that are in me through sweat. But the key, and this is really an important key, is you have to hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. It is so important to drink water, to drink beverages, to consume foods that are high in water, because you want to sweat. You want to release the sweat, and this helps you cool off. This helps you manage your body temperature, and you have to keep replenishing water. I remember it was back in 1988. I was traveling in Israel. Actually, I was working there for 3 months. And this was a point that numerous people made to me. They said, it's very hot, it's very dry here, and you don't feel the heat as much as other places where it may be humid, like here in the United States, in New York, on the East Coast. And they said, you may not notice how hot it is, but you must continually drink. And they had, in many places, these diluted orange juice containers that they would serve or sell this orange flavored water, and I found it so refreshing. And I do it now. I like to drink water with something in it, a squeeze of lime juice, a squeeze of lemon juice, or a little bit of orange juice, fresh orange juice, that's highly diluted. And then another thing I like to do, I'm a big tea drinker, and it's really hard to drink hot tea in this weather, although sometimes I do it, but I like to make tea and let it cool to room temperature, and then either keep it at room temperature or put it in the refrigerator. And, you know, there are so many wonderful, wonderful teas available today. We are so lucky, the abundance and variety we live in. I was given a box of green tea as a gift, and it's a bunch of different green tea bags flavored with different fruit essences. So there's blueberry green tea, raspberry green tea, mango, papaya, pomegranate. And these make wonderful iced teas, wonderful. And so I make a few bags of that in the morning, bring it to room temperature, and then bottle it in my glass bottles, put it in the refrigerator, and I've got something wonderful to drink all day. So important to hydrate and keep cool. But for some people that are very sensitive to heat, and there's lots of different reasons why one might be sensitive to heat, it's important to also keep cool. And so we're fortunate to be able to have technology and air conditioning here in New York. There are actually specific locations, senior centers for people to go who don't have a cool space to be in, and they can stay in these cool areas to wait out the peak of the heat. But right now, I'm just sitting here sweating it off. I like to go to Costa Rica, and one of the things that I have always enjoyed doing is hiking in the really, really hot weather. I suppose I could do it here, but it's fun doing it in a tropical environment. Just sweating so much, walking for a long time, a vigorous walk, a couple of hours, sweating, carrying my bottles of water with me so I'm rehydrating. And when I'm done, it's the cleanest feeling. It is nothing like a quick shower or a bath. You feel so clean inside and out. It is the most amazing feeling. And so I think this weather is important. And I think it's important to experience heat and sweating and give your body a chance to cleanse. The summer foods are designed for this. Lots of fruits, watery fruits, fresh produce that's filled with water so that we can consume them. And we don't feel like eating heavy foods in the summer. We feel like eating those light foods that hydrate us, go in and out, and really enable us to cleanse. That's what I think, anyway. So I'm going to enjoy summer. Summer foods, summer weather. Let's see, I posted one recipe in the last day or two. You know, I've been on vacation, and so haven't been able to post a lot of different things. But it's great to eat a lot of raw, fresh food, but sometimes you want to cook up something quickly, and that's where stir fries come in handy because they're really quick. And the newest recipe I put on Responsible Eating and Living is a summer vegetable stir fry with red pepper, onions, and tomatoes, basil, all those great summer flavors, and eggplant. And I stir fried that up with a firm sprouted tofu. You can use any kind of firm tofu, but there are some brands of sprouted tofu that are available today that I really, really enjoy. And I marinated or sauteed the tofu in champagne. And you could use white wine or beer, but I had a little leftover champagne and really gave a very nice, sweet, tart, lovely flavor to the tofu. Of course, you want to make sure that your alcoholic beverages are vegan. And there's a great website called barnivore.com where you can check most of your favorite alcoholic beverages and find out if they are using any animal products in the process of making them. It's kind of hard to believe, but animal products are everywhere. And with alcoholic beverages, especially beer and wine, there are egg products, gelatin products, fish products that are used as a filtration or a settling medium to separate the solids out of the beverage before bottling. Barnivore.com. It's a fun site. Okay, I think that's about it. Thank you for joining me on Ask a Vegan. As I mentioned, we are planning a whole new program, a whole new format. It's going to be really fun and funny. That's coming up in a few months. Stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, visit responsibilityandliving.com, all of our new recipes and videos, and drop me a line at info@realmeals.org. And one more thing. We are a 501c3 not-for-profit company, and we can only do what we do with help from listeners like you. And so if you have the opportunity, we would really appreciate a donation. Any size is welcome, and you can go to the responsibilityandliving.com website, click on the donate button. It's simple and easy and goes through PayPal. And all of those out there who have already contributed, thank you so much. It means so much to me to have your support. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to Ask a Vegan. We'll be back next week. And now, you're going to hear one of my favorite songs. Let's see. Here it is, The Real Jingle.
R-E-A-L.
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L.
Good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do.
When it comes to good health,
we need facts that are true. To choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.
You'll find the real tools for you.